Thank you for joining the call this morning. My name is Joe Sheely. I'm Vice President of Communications with U.S. Meat Export Federation. And I know a number of you have been on these conference calls before. I want to thank you for joining today, and I want to first introduce our panel. We'll kick things off. We'll start with USMEF CEO Philip Tsang. He'll be joined by USMEF President Dan Hallstrom. Dan became president September 1st of this year. We also have Joel Haggard, who's our Senior Vice President for the Asia Pacific, and Oscar Ferrara, who joined us late last year as our Regional Director in Mexico, Central America, and the Dominican Republic. In a bit of a departure from past calls, I've muted the guest lines today. You can unmute by using star six. And so when we're in the opening remarks, if there's something that you would like repeated or clarified, you can unmute and ask that question. But in the alternative, you may also just text me or email me. I'll be watching for both. My contact information is in the invitation. And so if you didn't catch something, you'd like it repeated or something clarified before the Q&A, feel free to text me or email me, and we'll try to get that clarified so you don't have to wait for the Q&A session. Once everybody's made their opening remarks, we will we'll go to Q&A. And then at that point, you'll be able to ask a question by unmuting your phone using star six, and just be sure to give your name and media outlet and who you are addressing your question to. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Phil Tsang, and he'll have some opening remarks about the state of the global markets.
Well, good morning, and I would, first of all, like to welcome you to this call this morning, and I'd just like to say that we're assembled here in Arizona. We're attending the USMEF Strategic Planning Conference. This is a conference where we invite our international directors to come to the United States. We have our entire membership present at this meeting, and this is a meeting where we share insights from the markets. We discuss strategies to go forward. And this is what we think is a very important meeting because it's fully participatory, and we have all sectors from producers to processors to packers to traders and exporters. And in addition to that, with our overseas directors, they're bringing the reality of the international markets to this meeting. So we see this meeting as a very vital meeting as we go forward. I think when we take a look at 2017, I think we're very pleased with the results that we've been able to achieve this year. If we take a look at this, we're up about 9% on pork exports. When we take a look at this on a volume basis, we're up about 10% on the beef side. So with these double-digit increases from year to year, it's very clear that the international marketplace and the international component to the industry is actually pulling its weight because our exports are growing at least double to almost three times faster than our production. So this continues to be a very profitable center for the entire industry, the export industry, the export component, and for that we're very, very happy. When we drill down a little bit further, I think into the export area, especially when we start talking about beef, we can see that we're up in Japan about 23%. This has some mixed emotion with it that I'll address maybe just a little bit later. In Korea, we're up about 8%, which has been a very positive development in Korea. We've had some positive developments there with the trade. And then I think in the Hong Kong, China area that Joel will talk about, Joel Haggard will talk about, we're up about 15% in that area as well. The ASEAN area has been an area that we've been performing very well in. That's up about 75%. South America up 21%, and Africa has been up about 95%, and that's been primarily driven by South Africa, where just a couple of years ago we had access that we garnered into the South African market, and today South Africa has become our number four liver market, and I think this is really a testament to some of the good work that our staff and the U.S. government did as far as getting the export documentation, the requirements for that market, understanding it, and immediately we've seen South Africa grow to be a very, very positive development for us. You know, if we take a look at the pork side as well, We're up 9% in the pork complex, and I think this is very encouraging news for us because I think pork has been, it's always been a challenge to some degree. When we take a look at the situation, Mexico is up about 18%. Obviously, this is getting right at a threshold that is concerning because there is talk in Mexico about some ramifications that could result as a result of that growth. Oscar here will talk about this in more depth, but we're watching Mexico because it's become, quietly, it's become our number one volume destination, and it's a very important market for us, and it's a growing market for us. I think the Korean market on pork has performed very well. It's up at 27%. South America is up 96%. The Caribbean, ASEAN, and even Taiwan has become very, very good for us. I think that when I take a look at the issues that we're dealing with, I think probably trade access, trade policy, the trade agenda from the United States is one that we're watching very closely, especially in these times. I think that probably the most imminent thing that we're concerned about as the U.S. goes into its fifth set of negotiations with NAFTA would be the NAFTA itself. I think for the red meat industry, I don't think anyone would disagree with me that it's been actually a beautiful arrangement for the U.S. red meat industry. And there's so much more that goes on with trade agreements and relationships besides just the volumes and the values of the product that is sent. I'm reminded, and I really mean this, since in December of 2003, as you know, we had this little episode with BSE, and overnight 72 countries closed their door to U.S. beef. And that was in December. In January, the end of January, Canada opened its doors to U.S. beef for 30 months and on down cattle. And Mexico did this in March. And if you just recall, we just were celebrating here a few months ago when China opened its doors. But those two countries, the countries that are our neighbors, our closest friends, they opened up within 3 months a time. And this was very central to the viability of the U.S. beef industry and to some degree the survivability of the U.S. beef industry at the time. So I've never forgotten what Mexico and what Canada brought to the beef industry at this time. And when you take a look at international trade, it's really, really basically all about building relationships. I think if we take a look at the trade relationship with the North and South, everybody knows it's about a $1 trillion trade relationship. That's significant. And if you just take a look at NAFTA alone, ran some numbers here, just from 1994 to 2016, the U.S. exported $32 billion worth of beef to Mexico and Canada, and we exported $32 billion worth of pork. This is significant when you consider over the period of the NAFTA Accord, we've done that kind of performance. So I would say anything that would threaten our being in NAFTA, leaving NAFTA would be a mistake, and I think even threatening to leave NAFTA is basically a mistake. Moving on, just a couple other trade issues I think that we're concerned about. I think we all saw here this summer where Japan did increase the frozen duty on chilled product. I think this speaks to a larger issue for us. As you know, as a result of the United States leaving TPP, we were left at a disadvantage as a result of the fact that the Australians have signed an accord with Japan a couple of years ago, and they have an EPA. Today, if you compare, our duty is at 38.5%. The Australians are 27.2%. That's a significant difference. Then with the safeguard being activated, the duty went to 50%. So right now on frozen product, we are sitting with a 50% duty. Australia has a 27.2% duty. I know there's been a lot of reporting that says, well, this isn't that significant. But to me, any time a duty goes up by double digits by 11.5%, that's a major occurrence. That's a major and significant event that's happening. And so I would say it's had impact for us. It's had immediate impact. Our frozen was down 26% in August. The chilled was up 54%. And I think it's very important that we take a look at this because that is what it's been from the U.S. standpoint, but the impacts in Japan have been immediate. Just a week ago, it was announced that one of the major Gyudon change, which would be a beef bowl change, is switching to pork from beef. That's 1,000 outlets. And so as people look forward, especially in the markets where we're very concerned about what's happening and these impacts in the trade, it's already having, I think, significant impacts. And I'm just reminded of an old saying that really resonates with me today is the only bad trade agreement is the one that you're not in. And I think that as we talk about pulling out of these agreements, I'm pleased that we've been able to sustain our presence in Korea with the CORUS agreement. But I do remind that there's been over 300 different FTAs and EPAs initialed around the world. Our competitors are working at this assiduously, trying to conclude these agreements. And really, if you take a look at what the reality is today in international trade, there's really two forms of competition. There's the commercial competition that we're all accustomed to, and then there's these trade agreements. And if you're at a disadvantage in a trade agreement, you really are disadvantaged. And so I think these are things that we really need to be aware of and work at going forward. So maybe with that, I'll stop here. We have other staff here that are extremely familiar with a lot of these issues and directly dealing with them, and I'll turn it over to them at this point in time.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Dan Hallstrom is with us. Dan, before we go to Joel and Oscar for some market-specific insights, do you have anything to add on a global outlook?
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Good morning, everybody. Just a couple of points I might add is that as Phil had mentioned, this is our strategic planning conference, and a couple of key strategies that are inherent in all of our methodology around the world is trying to maximize the value of the carcass. And, really putting the right cut in the right market to maximize value is not only what is inherent in our DNA, but a lot of our exporter members, this is what they're focused on as well. So, give you a couple of examples, and my colleagues here will cover some of the larger mainstream markets. I'd like to focus on a couple of emerging regions. Phil had mentioned South America, for example, Central and South America. This is a region of the world that's made up of several countries, using South America as an example. On the beef side, we have tremendous growth, 21% up in the region, but we have tremendous growth into Chile, Peru, and Colombia on the beef side. And for example, on Peru, it's a huge beef variety meat market. A lot of tripe, a lot of hearts go down to that region of the world. The flip side of that is, if you look on the pork side, Colombia has had huge growth this year, up 85% on pork, and this is a combination of probably 7 or 8 different items, but the mainstream items would be boneless picnics, hams, ribs, as well as variety meats. So really putting a right cut in the right market is what we are focused on to maximize value. And kind of shifting gears, Phil also mentioned Africa. And this is a region of the world that we've been involved in with our membership in a lot of detail in the last 4 years especially. And we're starting to see demand emerge down there, albeit it's small at the moment, but the pace of growth is very fast. And we're basically on beef side to the region, we've doubled the volume versus a year ago. And it's primarily livers and kidneys on the pork side as well. We're seeing growth into South Africa. And this is primarily primal cuts for further processing. So my point is that the more demand you can create globally for these products, the more we can force the cut out higher, which eventually translates into better prognosis for the live price. So those are my comments, but I just wanted to touch on some of these emerging regions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dan. I think we'll go to Joel Haggard now. Joel, as I said, is our Senior VP for the Asia-Pacific region, and he'll tell us about the state of play in some of the Asian markets.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I think what I'll do is start with some comments on pork. It's been pretty amazing this year that the U.S. has been able to maintain an upward momentum. If you look at the fact that China's pork imports through the first three quarters of this year were down by 450,000 tons. So that's, I don't know how many containers that is. It's something like 20,000 containers has been taken off the global pork market. And during 2016, China imported a record amount of of pork. It's probably the largest amount of meat or poultry ever imported by a single country in a single year. But the expansion in Chinese pork production that's happened this year so far, a rebound in the cycle, has caused the decline in imports, which really has affected everyone, not just the U.S., but also our principal competitor there, the European Union, where their exports to China are down 29%, the U.S. is only down 12%. So, and as Dan was saying earlier, this idea of being able to have a diverse portfolio of markets for us has been extremely important this year. So if you look at the markets that have been able to take up the slack, you have Korea that's really kind of offset the U.S. tonnage reduction to China. But you have also some of these secondary markets. I call them secondary. They're still large volume markets, but some of these other markets in Asia, like Philippines, Australia, and Taiwan, that have been able to, where we've been able to see some growth there. So anyway, the story on the pork side has really been one of being able to still grow despite the absence of growth in the China market, where the U.S. still remains the number one single country supplier. I think I'm going to move to the beef comments now, and before I do want to give everyone an update on where we stand with the marketing of U.S. beef in China. But, you know, again, just in Asia, one thing I want to highlight is the growth in demand and the growth in demand for U.S. beef. I was looking at market shares for U.S. beef in Japan and Korea. In the last 5 years, they've both grown. I have the market shares for U.S. beef has steadily grown from 2013 in Japan from 33% to 42%, and in Korea from 34% to 45%. And these are in growing markets, and that's why we're seeing these large numbers so far this year to the region. So I know this year's been the year of China opening up, but I think I think it's amazing that in countries like Japan and Korea, we're still getting, we're still finding markets within markets. We're selling the whole carcass, and we're being able to take advantage of that increase in demand. In reading Japan, Phil knows this better than myself. Demand and consumption has been fairly flat, but we've seen this uptick over the last couple of years, especially this year. Food service market's very strong. The economy's growing.
Beef consumption in Japan is up 4% this year.
Yeah, which is, that's faster growth than in China. So let's not forget these kind of these mainstream markets. I think the other point that Joe reminded me of is just looking at these chilled statistics. So we like at MEF, we like to see the chilled numbers go up, because chilled business represents more program buying and less commodity buying. So this isn't the chilled is selling into the supermarkets and restaurant chains. And we always, in most of those cases, the accounts buying that product may be a little bit less price sensitive to those buying just frozen commodity cuts. So we really like to see those chilled numbers go up. Taiwan, I want to talk about Taiwan a little bit, because Taiwan provides a glimpse of maybe where the China market's going in the future. But we have a 70% share of the chilled import market there. It's a very high quality market. We sell a lot of different Asian cuts there, both in frozen and chilled form. We're in a very wide variety of food service settings, ranging from fast food to steakhouses to Korean barbecue to hot pot. So we have a very diverse portfolio within Taiwan of our Asian cuts, and it's really helped sustain demand and values for items like for short ribs and boneless short ribs. These are items that where we depend a lot on the overseas markets for the value that gives to the overall carcass. Okay, so China, how's China beef doing? Well, it's been about 100, by my count, it's been about 125 days. This is the beginning of a long road. Again, going back to Dan's comments of having to pick different markets for different cuts around the globe, China is one where we have to try to sell all the animal in the market because of its requirements for so-called natural cattle and traceable cattle back to the birth farm and the extra cost that that imparts on the animals destined for the China beef supply chain. Our challenge moving forward is to market that whole animal there, and that's going to be a formidable challenge. So last 100 days, we've taken some low-hanging fruit. We're in iconic outlets such as Sam's Club and Morton's and Hyatt Hotels and Hilton's, but really, I think the work ahead is to go after some of these large indigenous food service chains and try to convince them to use some of our underutilized cuts, not just the Asian cuts like boneless short and short plate, but items that are not all that popular in other Asian markets, like the shoulder clawed and the round. This is going to be a big challenge for us in the industry. I'd say if there's one hope on this is that there's China. A lot of Chinese buyers don't have preconceived notions, so they're willing to sample the product. The pricing on some of these underutilized cuts, despite coming from some pretty pricey cattle, is still affordable. We think the meat quality is showing very well in China so far. So I still am very optimistic about the long term, but it's going to take time. For those of you that have seen the numbers so far, I think the latest U.S. Beef USDA export report, the weekly reports are showing just about over 800 tons of product exported so far since shipment started in late June. So that's a very modest amount. That's just a fraction of probably what we shipped to Taiwan in maybe 1 or 2 weeks. So we got a long way to go here, but the demand in China for beef, the growth in the food service industry, 10% increase in retail sales, even higher for food service industry, it just bodes very well for us in the long term. But it's gonna be a process. It's going to be hard work. It's not going to be commodity business. This is all going to be program buying. But I just remain confident that we can do it and that our type of product fits the taste of the Chinese consumer. So I think I'll leave it there and take questions later.
Okay. Joel, before we go to Oscar, I wanted to kind of ask you, going back to the increase in China's pork production, the rebound in China's pork production, do you feel like that's more sustained, will be more sustained this time, a more sustained rebound because of their shift toward industrial facilities, or do you think we'll stay on a roller coaster there?
No, it's a very good question. Of course, there's always the disease. There's always the disease factor, which in the past has caused disruptions to the cycle and to production. But I think this whole and something that I will be addressing to the general session tomorrow, the whole supply side reforms that Xi is putting in place, I think we're seeing policy that is going to open up the pork market to more market forces, less policy influence. This wave of closing of farms due to enforcement of environmental regulations is nearing its end. And if we look at the large pork producers, the profit incentives that over the last year have ranged from up to $200 a head, now maybe $30 a head for a farrow to $30 to $40 a head for a farrow to finish, those are still very strong incentives. So we're seeing a rebound that probably would have gone higher if not for these environmental regulations. So I think, again, the supply side reforms, I don't think Xi and his regime will switch those back. So we are looking long term at a major restructuring of their industry, a process that's going to go on for a number of years.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll go to Oscar Ferrara. As I mentioned, he's our regional director for Mexico, Central America, and the Dominican Republic. Of course, Mexico, very, very large pork market for us and a large beef market, but also want to mention that we're having a very strong year in both Central America and the Dominican. So, Oscar, would you like to touch on conditions in those markets?
Yes, good morning. Yes, just following up what Phil and Dan were talking about, the market, the Mexican market and Central American market. Mexico, we have we're expecting this 2017 to be another record year. We have seen in the market, even though we have a lot of noise coming from the NAFTA negotiation, we have seen an increase in consumption. Look at the numbers. During the last 3 years, Mexican consumption per capita went up about 1 pound, and we are expecting the next 10 years about another kilogram is about two pounds per capita. And out of that, 62% of that consumption, increment in consumption, will come from a consumption of U.S. pork products. In terms of beef, also Mexico, we have a very solid market. We are expecting an increase of 1% with respect to last year. One of the things that is we are looking in Mexico is customers in Mexico, they really are depending on our export. We have a conversation with our trade partner, and they're expecting to expand their operation in Mexico, not only for pork but also for beef. One of the companies that we are in conversations, they are planning to open 350 outlets next year in the central area of Mexico. So what we are seeing in Mexico is a tremendous growth for an appetite for U.S. Red meats. In terms of Central America, our most important market for pork is Honduras. We have seen an increment of about 10% in export in Honduras. In terms of beef, Guatemala is our top market for beef in Central America. I just want to make a point here that with respect to what we, like following up what Phil was saying about NAFTA, I think we have a situation right now in which we are creating, the negotiations are creating a lot of uncertainty in the market. We have seen a Mexican delegation going to looking for other markets. We have seen two delegations going to Brazil, one delegation going to Argentina. And also we are seeing a lot of an increment in import from Chile and in Central American countries. So for us, for the U.S. Red meat industry, in particular pork, Mexico is not only the numbers are showing us that it's an important market, but they rely on our export. And pork is a major source of protein for Mexicans.